Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Kate Faulkner.
Hello, hope you're okay. Thank you for downloading today's podcast on Thursday, October 16th. Coming up today, a Kent MP fights for the repair of Galley Hill Road during PMQs, life-saving technology to mark Restart a Heart Day, and a 95-year-old hockey club in Kent being forced out of its home. But first, taking a look at our top story, the sister of a Kent man who died from carbon monoxide poisoning is launching a campaign to get detectors in all homes. 27-year-old Elliot Bourne fell asleep on a sofa in front of a coal fire in Hythe in 2021. He was discovered unresponsive the next day. Today would have been his 32nd birthday. Jennifer Bourne has launched a petition calling for a change in the law to make them a legal requirement. She's been speaking to Nicola.
Elliot was found in a privately owned home. He had gone to that particular home to help someone in need and was given the sofa to sleep on for the night. What we do know is that a fire was lit, an open fire within the front room, and coal was used. What we think happened is Elliot went to sleep that night with coal simmering, and that was what emitted the carbon monoxide, which killed him, unfortunately.
Tell me a little bit about Elliot. What was he like, and why are you so passionate to keep his name alive by going on with this campaign and making sure that other lives are saved?
Elliot was the sort of person that people gravitated to. He was generous to a fault. He was the sort of person that would give you the clothes off his back. He had a smile that could light up a room. And I know it sounds incredibly cliche, but it doesn't do him justice. He was just a kind-hearted, hard-working young man who had his whole life ahead of him. And I, for one, am incredibly proud to call him my brother.
And how much would it mean to you to get the law changed to make sure that everyone has a detector in their home, kind of doing it in his memory? How important would that be?
Elliot was the sort of person, like I said, to help anyone. And if his story helps one family, you know, to make them think maybe we don't have a carbon monoxide detector as we go into the winter. Why don't we get our boiler checked or our fires, our chimneys swept? It would just mean the world to us, because then we feel like his death wouldn't be in vain. And he's still helping people even in his death. And that warms our heart.
Tell us a little bit about these detectors. I'm sure you've done loads of research and learned a lot about them. I mean, they sound like they're very similar to a smoke alarm. How do they work?
Yeah, well, they're incredibly similar to a smoke alarm. I agree with you. They're a small box that you can stick up anywhere where there'd be a gas emitting appliance, essentially. They're inexpensive. They're less than £30. The batteries tend to last on average about 10 years and would notify you, a bit like a smoke detector, when battery is running low. So to my mind, they're inexpensive and lifesavers.
All new builds have to have these, don't they? So if you're in a new build property, I mean, it's still probably worth checking, but they should have an alarm in them.
Yeah, absolutely. So the law has been changed to a degree. So yes, new builds, rented accommodation, places of work are all legally obliged to have a carbon monoxide detector. However, pre-existing houses still don't need to. They don't have a legal obligation to have a carbon monoxide detector, and that's where we are aiming to change the law. The importance of the campaign going live is actually Elliot's birthday. Elliot would have been 32, so it's a very significant date for the family, and I think the fact that we should be celebrating with him. But what we're trying to do is memorialise him and turn it into a positive. And with that, what we've done is started a petition. So we would urge anyone, if they could take a couple of minutes of their time to sign the petition, we would be eternally grateful.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories today. Three men in court over the death of another man in Sittingbourne have denied murder. J. David Garrett died in August. It's alleged he fell from a 6-foot wall after being chased. He was then struck by a car. It's understood none of the suspects were in the vehicle. A trial will start in February next year. A Dartford man who became violent and abusive at a party to celebrate his release from prison is back behind bars. Shane Doyle assaulted two women and a man at the gathering in Loondale Road on the Fleet Estate in February. The 44-year-old, who has no fixed address, also spat at officers while he was being arrested. He's been locked up for nearly 6 years. Two men have gone on trial accused of attempted attempted murder following an attack on the A2 near Canterbury. Lucy has more details for the podcast.
The men were charged after two others were injured on the London-bound stretch near the A28 Wincheap Junction last December. It's understood an axe and a cricket bat were used in the attack, which left one of the victims seriously hurt and the other in a life-threatening condition. Canterbury Crown Court has heard how the car they were in was forced off the road and that the case has links to human trafficking. 36-year-old Esmatullah Paktiawal from Britannia Place in Plymouth and 28-year-old Darwood Khan from Burnt Oak in Barnet both deny attempted murder and causing GBH with intent. The trial continues.
Kent Online News.
Elsewhere today, a hearing's been told how a fit and healthy man from Margate died almost a year after being hit by a car. Michael Piper suffered a number of injuries when he was struck by an Audi in Cliftonville in April last year. The 80-year-old passed away in February and an inquest has been opened and adjourned. A 28-year-old man has appeared in court over the collision and admitted causing serious injury by careless driving and drug driving. He's due back in court next month. A woman who lives on Chatham High Street says she's had months of sleepless nights because of break-ins at an empty shop near her home. Rough sleepers and drug users are apparently forcing entry at night and making noise for neighbours. It follows growing concerns about antisocial behaviour in the town centre. Medway Council say they're taking action alongside police to make improvements. A Kent MP has told Parliament there's no fix in sight for a road that was damaged in a cliff collapse more than 2 years ago. Galley Hill Road in Swanscombe has been closed since April 2023. Jim Dixon represents the area. He raised the issue at PMQs.
This government is renewing Britain's infrastructure after 14 years of neglect, and nowhere is this more clearly needed than in the A226 Galley Hill Road in Swanscombe, in my constituency, which collapsed more than 2 years ago with no fix in sight. Would the Prime Minister agree with me that the announcement of the Transport Structures Fund in the spending review shows that under this government, we're ending the Conservative decline and getting on with fixing broken roads like Galley Hill?
Yeah. Well, he's right. The party opposite let roads crumble after years of uninvestment. We're building infrastructure that working people rely on. Mr Speaker, that's £1 billion to repair bridges, tunnels and flyovers across the country and £92 billion in major road and rail upgrades.
Kent Online News.
A new report's revealed council bosses in Canterbury are failing to meet consumer standards when it comes to social housing. And inspections found gaps in property survey data, delays responding to tenants' complaints and weaknesses in the reporting and monitoring of antisocial behaviour. Concerns have also been raised about unfinished work to adapt people's homes. The regulator says it'll keep working with the City Council to address the issues. There are urgent calls for a review of the County Council's education plan, with the deadline for secondary school applications just weeks away. Families are concerned we'll see a repeat of last year's offerings when more than 50 families on Sheppey were given school places off the island. KCC's current plan will be in place until 2033-34, but experts want to see a lack of provision addressed before then. Now, the ambulance service that covers Kent is urging people to sign up to a new app that could save a life. Good Sam can be downloaded onto your smartphone and links 999 call handlers to first aid trained members of the public nearby. I've been speaking to Dave Hawkins, who was a critical care paramedic with CCAM. He's explained to me what the app is all about.
Put simply, if you heard your neighbour crying for help and saying, you know, just calling out, you'd probably go and help. Think of Good Sam as a slightly louder shout for help. So Good Sam is a smartphone app that people who have a valid first aid at work certificate or basic life support qualification can download onto their smartphone. And where the ambulance service becomes aware of somebody that they believe to be in cardiac arrest, an alert will trigger on that person's phone if they're within 500 metres of that person in cardiac arrest. So you really are talking a couple of streets away. Now, there's no obligation to attend, but if you happen to be available and you are willing at that moment in time, you can press the accept button and the app will guide you to that person. And the idea is that you could offer CPR, you could offer chest compressions, because even if the person on scene knows how to do that, the likelihood is that somebody that's a little removed is going to be more able to deliver that service. Or even if you happen to know where there's a public access defibrillator, just grabbing that and taking it to the scene is equally valuable. That would be a good thing to do. So I'd really urge and encourage anyone that feels that they would to sign up to the Good Sam app. Simply Google Good Sam and it will be the first result that you get.
And I suppose the idea behind that is that they can offer potentially life-saving skills while the paramedics are on their way. And I remember reading in the press release, in a cardiac arrest, seconds are vital.
So this is the key. And so the first thing is, this is not a replacement for the ambulance service, and good SAM responders do not contribute to our performance standards in any way at all. This is completely about saving life. So if you suffer a cardiac arrest, for every minute that goes by, 10% goes off of your chance of survival unless there's good CPR ongoing. The ambulance service takes on average 7 minutes to arrive. So you do the maths and you can see that bystander CPR is key to saving patients in cardiac arrest. The idea of the Good Sam app is very simply to try and get somebody to the patient in the shortest time frame possible and maximize the chance of a successful outcome.
We're all being encouraged to learn life-saving skills as we mark Restart a Heart Day. As part of the event, I've been speaking to an engineer who's designed an innovative defib cabinet, which has been installed in a Kent village. There was no suitable location with an electricity supply available in Middlestoke as the parish council looked to safeguard the community. They've installed a cabinet which is completely solar and wind powered. Mike Dowson is from Turtle Medical. They came up with the technology.
Defibrillators have been around for about 15 years and now they're on the sides of quite a lot of shops, village halls, things like that. The problem is if you've got a location, a small village somewhere rural, which has got people living there, and there's no public building to put a defibrillator on, understandably, most people don't want one on the side of their house. It could affect the ability to sell the house in the future, and it often means going through somebody's gate to get the defibrillator. So there was no real solution for kind of providing a defibrillator where you didn't have a public building to put one on. So as we've been in the industry since the start building the defib cabinets, it's something that we've always wanted to try and solve as a problem. So we spent quite a bit of time working with Warwick University to come up with a solution where we could have a completely freestanding solution, which was self-powered, which has got the solar and the wind. Originally, we just wanted to go with the solar, but sadly, we don't get enough sun in this country in winter to make that happen. So we've added the wind turbine. And it just creates this nice kind of life-saving hub, really, which can be placed literally anywhere. We've got them, halfway around a golf course in villages, halfway up the sides of mountains, bike parks, reservoirs, all those kind of places where you've got lots of people, quite often people doing strenuous activities, which could result in a cardiac arrest. But there's nowhere to put a defibrillator. So our solution basically solves that problem, and we can put them anywhere.
It feels silly that we're only coming up with this technology now, that it's not been something that's always been in place. Was it a difficult process? Was it a difficult thing to piece together?
It was one of those things where we had to wait for the technology to catch up. So solar panels have only really started to become, vastly available in a good quality and at a right price in the last kind of 5 or 6 years, really. We had a few issues with the wind turbines originally because a lot of domestic wind turbines actually ask you to take them down in high winds, which obviously isn't practical. You can't go to, some local council, can you just walk halfway up a mountain and take the wind turbine down because we've got a storm coming? So we had to find the wind turbine we use. It's developed by a UK company. They originally made it to go out in the ocean on buoys to do kind of monitoring and warning systems for the shipping industry. So it's a really, really heavy duty, robust device, and it can cope with all the kind of gale force storms that we could get in this country. So whilst, yes, on one side, it's kind of a really simple thing. You think, the solar panels and wind turbines have been around for ages. Actually, getting the right ones which are going to work and getting it all at an affordable price for communities to fund was the challenge, really. And then we've also had the challenge of actually where these are remote, we need to be able to monitor them, make sure they're okay. So we need to kind of remote monitoring systems, which again, it's basically got a little computer running inside there, which is checking everything's okay and it reports back. So it took a while for that kind of technology to be available at an affordable price.
Stoke Parish Council has now been nominated as a Restart a Heart Day hero.
Kent Online News.
Another road in Maidstone is going to be closing for emergency gas works. Lewes Road will be shut between the Wheatsheaf Junction and the fire station near Boughton Lane from Monday. Engineers say pipes need replacing because of multiple leaks. Boxley Road and Salisbury Road are also currently closed for similar work. Plans have been put in to turn part of the Pentagon Shopping Centre in Chatham into flats. If approved, the development would see 21 one-bed and 3 2-bed flats built across 3 floors above the shop level. Balconies and a rooftop terrace and garden space would also be created. A Kent hockey club that's been running for almost 95 years is facing a fight for survival after having to leave its permanent home. K-Sports was based at Cobdown Sports Ground in Ditton until it was sold to the London City Lionesses football team. They've been using school facilities in Rochester and Maidstone over the past year but are now hoping to relocate to Kings Hill. Matt Sharp is the current club chairman. He's been speaking to reporter Ellie Hodgson.
We're looking to run this in partnership with the parish council and the community to build a state-of-the-art hockey facility that helps both the community with extra facilities, extra capacity to do things. It helps the borough in terms of their playing pitch strategy and growing where there's a shortfall or deficit in facilities. It's about sort of planning application when that comes together, getting support and sort of people that want to come on that journey with us. It's really about sort of trying to keep the only hockey club going in the borough, maintain that and get us back to where we were sort of 18, 24 months ago in terms of playing in the top leagues, lots of teams, lots of adult teams, lots of junior teams, taking that onto the next level, really. But a facility and a home is probably key to allowing us to do that.
And talking of funding, how much do you need to raise? And is there a GoFundMe available yet?
Total price or total cost, if you like, which we've gone through all the feasibilities of. So to get a pitch in place with the relevant bits and pieces that you need, so separated spectator space and team space, storage, parking, everything else, we've got a target of 1.3 million. At the moment. That doesn't include sort of changing rooms or club space or anything else like that, which goes on top. But the main aim at the moment, the first phase of the project, is sort of the pitch and what we need for a pitch. That's 1.3 million.
In terms of next steps, where are you now?
Yeah, so where we're at now, we've got a planning application that's coming together. So we're going through surveys and all the details in preparation for submitting a planning application. What we're at now is we're now going out to funding and grant applications. A lot have a prerequisite of needing planning permission in place, which we're working through, but some aren't. We're also just about to launch our crowdfunding page, which will explain the whole project, what we're trying to do, the community that we're linking into, and what this is about. It's not just about building a new pitch and getting money. It is about continuation of a club and growing it and then investing in the sports programs locally, working with the schools locally. There's a big business case we've got that sits behind it around sort of junior coaching, school coaching, everything else for state schools, because it is underrepresented in terms of hockey provision. Mm-hmm. Private schools and stuff like that have a very good feed for it, but working with our national governing body, i.e. England Hockey, is recognised that state schools are lacking for that sort of provision. So we're in there with this business case to then run and drive that in the community, but that can only happen if we've got the pitch.
Kent Online News.
An independent cinema in Herne Bay that was thought to be on the verge of collapse is undergoing a £100,000 makeover. Kavanagh Cinema went viral after one film lover shared a photo showing he was the only person at a screening earlier this month. However, bosses say they're thriving and are planning for the future with a new foyer, carpets, lighting and seating. There's been progress in plans to replace a tired seafront arcade in Herne Bay with a shop and houses. The multi-million pound revamp of Tivoli Amusements on Central Parade has suffered a number of setbacks. It had to be redesigned due to financial restraints. Fresh plans have now been submitted for consideration. A new weekend-long music festival coming to Kent has been dubbed the county's answer to Glastonbury. The Kent Tribute Weekender will feature 21 of Europe's top acts from rock, pop, soul and dance, along with entertainment, food and drink. It's on at Quex Park in Birchington next May. And a Kent actress is celebrating after picking up a prize at the Stage Debut Awards. Lucy Kazuski from Ramsgate was announced best performer in a play for her role in Stereophonic. After the win, she paid tribute to her roots in Thanet and the local arts community that helped shape her career.
Kent Online Sports.
Briefly, we'll take a look at cricket, and Kent legend Darren Stevens has rejoined the county as part of the 2026 men's coaching setup. A 49-year-old former all-rounder will become bowling consultant. Sam Faulkner has been named as bowling coach, while Jahid Ali is the new new batting coach. That's all from us today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials. You can also get the details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via The Briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And while you're on the website, you can sign up to Kent Online Premium. It gives you access to content with fewer ads, no pop-ups, and exclusive stories. You can choose the subscription plan that works best for you. To find out more, head to kentonline.co.uk/subscribe.
News you can trust. This is the Kent Online Podcast.